Welcome to the Free to Choose Media Podcast. Today's podcast is titled Culture in America, The Three Biggest Challenges Facing Western Civilization, Part 1. Recorded in 2007, Dennis McQuestion, former clinical professor of corporate governance and executive director of the Institute for Excellence in Corporate Governance at the University of Texas at Dallas, and former CIA official, author, and recipient of the U.S. National Intelligence Distinguished Service Medal, Herb Meyer, discussed the three biggest challenges facing Western civilization. We hope you enjoy today's episode, and don't forget to subscribe to the Free to Choose Media Podcast.
Last month, I had the pleasure of meeting Herb Meyer at a Washington Bankers Association meeting in Seattle, Washington, which is where Herb Meyer lives. He's a former CIA employee in the Reagan administration, and Herb is extremely concerned that Western civilization is facing three major challenges to its very survival. We're going to hear from him and what those challenges are. And let me tell you a bit about him. As I said, he was in the Reagan administration as a special assistant to the director of the CIA and vice chairman of the CIA's National Intelligence Council. He managed production of the U.S. National Intelligence Estimates and other top secret projections for the president and the National Security Advisors. He is widely credited with being the first senior U.S. government official to forecast the collapse of the Soviet Union, a forecast for which he later was awarded the U.S. National Intelligence Distinguished Service Medal, which is the intelligence community's highest honor. Herb, you were formerly an associate editor at Fortune. You've written several books, including one called The War Against Progress, Real World Intelligence and Hard Thinking. Of course, this is a DVD that you have called The Siege of Western Civilization. So first of all, tell us what those three challenges are.
Western civilization is under attack from the war itself, the attack by radical Islam or extreme jihadism, whatever you wish to call it, on the West. We're also in trouble because of our own demographic problems. We've stopped breeding, quite literally. The birth rates are now below the replacement level in most countries. That's a very serious threat. And finally, here in the United States, we're in the middle of what amounts to be a second civil war, the cultural war that we talk about. Those are three threats. One's external, two are internal, if you will, and they're all quite serious.
All right. Now, one of the things that I was particularly impressed with when I heard you speak last month, it was after the program that I was doing out there, and I was had the luxury of sitting around and listening to you, I'm happy to say, is that you talked about, first of all, what Western civilization is. And for that viewer who may or may not have had the opportunity to study a course in Western civilization in college, or like me, it's been a few years since we've been in college and probably have forgotten which college we were in, much less what the definition of Western civilization is. Give us some sense of what the war is against when you say Western civilization.
When you study history, it's really the story of competing operating systems. If there's one thing we all understand these days, it's competing operating systems. And when operating systems collide in the marketplace, things can get very nasty very quickly. But there are no tanks. Microsoft and Apple work it out. In politics, there really are tanks. And when one operating system attacks the other, that's war. That's the definition of a war. Our operating system is Western civilization. It started with the Greeks, but it took off in Europe in the 15th and 16th centuries when Judaism and Christianity reconciled with the modern world. The rabbis, the priests, the scholars, they worked it out. They paved the way forward. By the way, that ignited the scientific revolution. It triggered the greatest explosion of art, literature, and music the world's ever known. Shakespeare, Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, Bach. Here's what Western civilization is. The individual is at the center of it. Church and state are separate. It's the rule of law, the idea of property rights, economic liberty, individual rights, human rights, women's rights. In Western civilization, we unleash the entrepreneurial talents of our people. We encourage intellectual curiosity. It's an endless struggle for equality among the races and the sexes, not always successful. Is Western civilization perfect? No, couldn't be. It's designed and operated by human beings, but it's the modern world itself.
All right, now when
and
you
that's
say,
us.
Okay, when you say Western civilization, give me an idea, and you'll add to what you just said in just a minute, but give me an idea of geography in there, or is it just sort of an operating system that could exist anywhere?
Could exist anywhere. It's the United States, Canada, Europe, Japan is part of Western civilization. More and more Asian countries are joining Western civilization. To a real extent, it's the modern world. Anybody who accepts those principles, you're in Western civilization. And it really seems to be the operating system that most people find works best. And what you're seeing when you look at the war is an attempt by another operating system to knock us off.
Okay. And those other operating systems include radical Islam?
Well, World War II, we had fascism. That was an operating system. The Cold War was the Soviet communist operating system. Now the threat comes from radical Islam or extreme jihadism. You can use any combination of phrases you want, them. In that operating system, as these extremists see it, the individual is not at the center of it. Church and state are not separate. It's combined. It's a political as well as a religious operating system. The individual is subservient to it, and you do not have the option to opt out. That system does not unleash the entrepreneurial talents of its people. It discourages intellectual curiosity. By the way, this is one of the great tragedies of human history. The Muslims are geniuses. They invented algebra. That's an Arabic word. They invented the concept of the zero. They virtually invented the science of medicine. If you spend 1,000 years crushing intellectual curiosity, you don't get new medicines, you don't get new vaccines, new technologies. That all this genius has been lost to the human race is an incalculable tragedy. And in this extreme operating system, women are treated as though they were property rather than people. Very simply put, it's incompatible with the modern world, and that's the glitch.
All right. Now, when you say radical Islam or Islamic Jihad, let me be clear for that viewer, because I interviewed a guy named Fawaz Gurgis last year. I wrote a book called The Journey of the Jihadist. I don't know if you know him or have read his book, but basically he says that there's a small percentage of people who comprise what he was calling the jihadist. And then he said there's a larger percentage called the Islamist, and there's everybody else who sort of, you know, practices and all that, mm-hmm. but they are, you know, acclimated to the modern world, so to speak. What are we talking about in terms of a percentage, or is it just an idea, or are we talking about Al-Qaeda? Are we talking about various other groups that are that use terror as a weapon? Who are we talking about?
Well, it's a good question for which there isn't a very precise answer. It's them. Look, human nature doesn't change. Most human beings are very decent people. They just want to go about their business, raise their kids, live quietly, and not cause trouble. Most Germans weren't Nazis. Most Russians weren't communists. But when the creeps are in charge, you have a real problem. Most Muslim people are the most wonderful people you'd ever want to meet. Be lucky to have them as your neighbors. But you get a percentage of them. It would include Al-Qaeda. It would include the Taliban. It would include that whole alphabet soup of radical groups that you can never remember because it changes every time you pick up the paper. It's them. So it isn't Islam in a sense. It's the radical part of it. In a way, there is a civil war within Islam itself between the radicals and the moderates, who are the overwhelming majority. And we've been caught up in their civil war. It's now spilling over and hitting us. And that's the problem for us. If it was contained within their own societies, it could be a very great tragedy for them, but it's got nothing to do with us. But now they're coming after us, and so we get involved.
Okay. There are a lot of people who would say that we have done a good thing by going into Iraq. A lot of people would say we've done a bad thing by going into Iraq. I don't know that you have an opinion on that one way or the other, but how does it play into, were we reacting to what we saw, or did we cause some of that, or we made things worse by going there?
Well, honorable people can disagree about whether we should have gone into Iraq, how we're doing this, and that's another conversation for another time. The point is this. When you're under attack, we were hit on September 11, and that wasn't the first attack. It was sort of the last one that made us notice we were in. The problem is you cannot just play defense. When you play defense, you lose. You have to win 100% of the time when you play defense, and you can't. If we had a perfect CIA, it would stop 25 out of 26 terrorist attacks. That's great, except you're dead. The 26th attack killed you. So what do? The objective of the war is not to impose our operating system on them, but to use our military power to remove some of the radicals and to give the moderates a chance to hold power. in many cases, the first chance they've had to hold power in a very long time. Our hope is that over time, they will figure out how to reconcile their faith with the modern world, how to deal with the civil war that's raging within their own culture. If they can do that, the level of violence will drop. Everyone will be safer. Now, honorable people can disagree over whether we're going about that the right way. But that's the idea. And one of the great tragedies of our conversation about the war is that all of this has dropped out of the conversation. We've become so partisan, arguing about should we be in Iraq, should we do this, should we do that, that we've lost sight of what the objective is, which is to create conditions in which that operating system can join us in the 21st century.
Good, thanks.
I totally agree with you that obviously 500 years ago, Western civilization did take off quite a bit when it did reconcile some things. But my question to you is, did Islam and the Muslim world really need to reconcile religion and politics, or religion and the state, or religion and the individual's liberty 1,000 years ago when you were saying that they were doing, accomplishing great things?
Well, they were accomplishing great things. They were the leaders. But somewhere it went off the rails. Now, there are Islamic scholars who've dealt with that in much more detail and precision than I can. But somewhere that operating system took a bad turn. Now, again, come back to the point, the overwhelming majority of people aren't the problem. But you simply cannot look at the state of Islam today and not notice that there's a serious problem there.
All right, let me take you back to you've been concerned about these type of issues for, I guess, almost 30 years. I mean, the book you wrote on the War Against Progress was before you even went in to work for the CIA, if I recall. Is that right?
That's what got me to President
That's
Reagan.
That's what got you to President Reagan. Okay, so let's go back and take the Soviet Union as an example. We were in this Cold War for many, many years. So you go into the CIA, and one of the issues that you're dealing with is coming across your desk. You explain to us how it happens anyway. Is a question. How close to bankruptcy is the Soviet Union, perhaps? Was that one of the questions? And strategically, what should we do based upon intelligence? Now, we sort of believe that we've gotten in a position where we have an oxymoron if we talk about, you know, military intelligence and all that these days, because it hasn't been all that good, frankly. But what did you find, and what lessons did you learn there that you can apply to this challenge you're talking about today?
When the Reagan administration came to power in 1980, the CIA and everybody else was saying that the Soviet economy was growing at a rate of over 3% a year. Now, that's very good. If it's growing at a rate of 3% a year, we were growing at 3% a year, the Cold War would go on forever. We came in and said that couldn't possibly be true. When you study the Soviet economy and look at that system, it couldn't possibly be growing. It's imploding. This is not just an argument between economists. If it's imploding, there's a way to end the Cold War. So what we set out to do is to test our theory, to see if the intelligence was there to support the notion that the Soviet economy was in trouble. And when we started looking in that direction, we found things that nobody had seen before because we weren't looking in that direction. Once we felt we had that, President Reagan was able to set a course to use their economic difficulties to end the Cold War peacefully.
Yeah, and that was 1983 or so when you
were
in there?
Those were the early 80s.
Yeah.
And we set that course. That's when everyone was calling President Reagan an amiable idiot.
Exactly. Well, he doesn't meet the discussion of idiot, but if you get the camera up there on the guy in the top row with the sort of sweatshirt on not the one guy on the beard, the good-looking guy on the beard, the other guy next to him, is a guy named Steve Pavich. Now, he and I happen to have been in Russia for the first time. We have three Russian folks here, by the way, talking about Russia up there and over here. We happen to be in the Soviet Union, which is what it was at the time, in 1983. And Steve wrote two or three books on the Soviet Union, including one called A Report Card on Socialism, which unfortunately a couple of people took with us, and he got in serious trouble when he took that book. And as I recall, his report card wasn't all that good. He is an economist, and he was basically saying, I think what you guys were saying, is that, you know, this kind of system cannot exist and cannot continue to exist. The question I have for you is, though, this kind of radical Islam, if in fact they're in a civil war, and I believe that you can make that case, what is the nature of it? Who's winning this thing internally? Forget how we're doing with it. Who's winning it internally from your standpoint?
It varies from place to place. in a place like Abu Dhabi, you can say the modernizers are winning. In Pakistan, it looks like it's coming unglued very quickly. So it really varies from place to place. I don't know if you can come up with one answer for whether the good guys are winning or not. I tend to be an optimist. I'm seeing the emergence of an enormous reform Muslim movement. People who want to move that culture and faith into the 21st century. And what we're trying to do is buy them enough time to do that.
Well, we'll send Charlie Wilson over there. What do you think? That'd be a way to do it. Now, let me go to your second one.
I'm not a big fan, but go ahead. The
demographic issue, which is not something about what's going to happen. The demographic issue is what is happening and has happened. Now, I don't know. I've got graphic number one, if you put graphic number one up there. And I think these are the numbers you used, and they may be slightly different from this, Herb. But if this happens to be pretty close to the birth rates that you talked about in that speech you made last month, talk to us about that and what the implication of those things happen to be.
Well, if you want to keep the population of a country at the same level, the birth rate has to be 2.1 births per woman. Two births to replace the mother and father, and then you need 0.1. Some children don't grow up and have their own children. Today in Western Europe, the overall birth rate is 1.5. That's 30% below replacement. What it means in real numbers is that 30 years from now, there will be between 70 and 80 million fewer Europeans alive than are alive today. That's shut down. It's the biggest, fastest population drop in world history.
Wow.
And you had Germany up there at 1.3. In Germany today, 30% of all women are childless, and among college-educated German women, 40% are childless. You won't find that in Texas. Japan is 1.3, trending down a little bit to 1.29.
Yeah, in fact, Japan lost population in 2006.
Well, they all do. If you're below 2.1, you lose population. Right. Sure, that's what happens. So they're so far below the replacement levels now that this is very serious. When you drop below the replacement levels, your whole population ages because you don't have enough young people replacing the older people. By 2020, one out of every five Japanese citizens will be over the age of 70. How you run a modern society with one out of five people over the age of 70, no one has the slightest idea. It's never been done.
Yeah. Well, that's a very interesting demographic. I'm going to ask you about the United States, which is at 2.0. But first, I'm going to go over here to somebody who is over 70.
Very brief question. Is there any difference in Germany between Bavaria and the rest of Germany?
I don't know the answer to that.
I suspect the answer might be yes.
Italy and Spain are Catholic.
Yeah.
And the birth rate in Italy and Spain is 1.2, trending down to 1.1.
I see.
The Catholic regions now have the lowest birth rates. In fact, even in Canada, Quebec is the Catholic province, and it has the second lowest birth rate in Canada. No one saw this coming. No one saw these complete collapses of the birth rate, and the economic implications are simply staggering.
I have one more question, but it's different. Is Putin Stalin with a human face?
Is he Stalin with a human face?
Yes.
Probably worse, yeah. Like everybody else, we hoped he was, you know, a bit of a thug, but maybe a modern thug, and he's looking like a total creep. He is driving Russia into the same ditch the communists drove it into back in the 20th century.
Well, and not
too
only
bad.
That,
but
the demographic issue in Russia is pretty dire, too, isn't it?
The population of Russia is now dropping so fast. By the way, the average lifespan of a man in Russia is under 58 years. The population is dropping so fast that by 2050, the population of Russia will be smaller than the population of Yemen, which has one of the world's high birth rates. Yemen's a little place. Russia covers one-sixth of the Earth's land surface. So what did they do? The governor of the province of Ulyanovsk, Putin's man, has issued a proclamation. From now on, September 12th of every year is officially the day of conception. Don't laugh, you're being culturally insensitive. Under the terms of the proclamation, on September 12th, all workers are given the afternoon off. With orders, I'm quoting the proclamation, with orders to go home and create a patriot for Russia. This strikes me as not a brilliant idea.
But
June 12th is officially the day of birth, by the way.
Yeah, June 12th is official day of birth. And why did they choose September the 12th?
I wasn't in the room when they made that decision. I haven't the slightest idea.
I see.
By the way, in Spain, where they have an even lower birth rate, they've made it illegal to use the words mother and father on a birth certificate because they're sexist. The official words on a Spanish birth certificate are progenitor A and progenitor B, because they're interchangeable.
Interesting. Kerry.
Can you talk about the birth rates of other civilizations, like the Muslims, and their ability to assimilate into Western civilization?
When you look around the world, the Muslim countries have the highest birth rates. They go from the 2.1 replacement level up to about 6.8, varying very widely from country to country. So that's where the growth is coming from. All through the advanced world, if you will, Western civilization, the birth rates are below the replacement level. They vary from country to country, but they're all below it. When you look at the Muslim countries, they're all above it. So that's where the population shift is.
Well, in many cases, you would see a direct correlation between societies which are becoming, let's just say, more entrepreneurial, more wealthy, and then the lowering of the birth rate. Is that likely to happen in Muslim societies, or is there something in
Islam
that's likely
not to make that work? Obviously, when you move into the modern world, you tend to have fewer children. Women are working. The way we live today, driving around, going to Disney World on vacations, things like that. So it's not a surprise that the birth rates have gone down a bit. What no one saw is that they would drop off a cliff. By the way, the birth rate in India is 2.8. The birth rate in China is 1.1. China is now the most rapidly aging country in the world.
Wait, yes,
which
ma'am.
Will kill them, by the way.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Being a Russian, I can't but comment on what you said about Russia. I certainly don't agree about what you said about Putin, but I'm not going to speak about that right now.
He's a thug.
Pardon?
He's a thug.
I don't agree, but I'm not going
tell
to
tell the
comment
people
on
he
that.
Murdered, but go right ahead.
I was going to comment on what you said about our birth rate. Certainly, the demographic situation is very bad. You said you spoke about this lore that they introduced. Yes, it's probably nice to show Russians as clowns, but what you haven't mentioned is that the federal government has recently introduced a law according to which each family which gives birth to a second child gets a very substantial, by Russian standard, amount of money that you haven't mentioned.
We haven't gotten to that. They have done that, and that is a very good thing to do. They're doing that in France, too. What they're trying to do is build up the birth rate. And what they've recognized is that the most likely person to have another child is someone who already has a child. In other words, if you have one or two children, you're more likely to have a third rather than a 32-year-old woman who's never been married having one. And so they're putting in financial incentives to have additional children, and that's a good thing.
Unfortunately, I have let us get way too close to time to get to the third one. That's the internal threat that you're talking about. Tell us about that.
Well, that's what we call the cultural war in the United States, and it's kind of become a second civil war. And it really revolves around the role of church and state. The shorthand version is the religious right versus the secular left, but that's sort of unfair to both sides when you say it that way. It really gets into the question of whether the family will be the center of our lives or the government will be the center of our lives. Who raises the kids? I mean, that really is the crux of it, no matter how you look. It gets into the question of whether you want a larger government or a smaller government. What should be the role of government? Politics is the relationship between the individual and the state. It's not Democrats versus Republicans or liberals versus conservatives. And the Second Civil War really comes out to what should be the proper relationship between the individual and the state.
Well, all that would have maybe sounded good before George W. was elected 7-8 years ago. But here's a guy who's grown the state more than anybody since LBJ. What do you make of that?
It's true he has. I mean, what can one say? That wasn't
maybe he's
that
really
wasn't
maybe
what
Al
a lot
Gore
of people was, expected.
Maybe
him to
Al
do.
Gore was really elected in Florida and nobody knew it. Maybe that's what happened.
Well,
do you think?
Let me stay out of that one.
Okay.
but what you're really seeing here, and by the way, you're quite right. There is a fracture within the Republican Party because much of what we've seen in the last years, the spending and things like that, is on the other side of that cultural divide.
Now, I wouldn't imagine that the folks you're talking about, whether they happen to be liberal or Democrat or neither, or what, I mean, most of those folks are pretty nice folks too, I would imagine, in general. I don't think that they don't have a platform, whether it's a party platform or an organizational platform that says we're out to destroy Western civilization. So why do you say they're doing that?
Well, to some extent, we've forgotten what Western civilization is. You'd be hard-pressed to find a lot of instructors or teachers who teach what it is. And by the way, when you look at schools around the United States, in Europe, in Japan, and by the way, there are wonderful exceptions to this, here in Texas and other places as well. Mostly what they're teaching the kids is that the worst thing that ever happened to planet Earth is humanity. We pollute. We use resources. Teach that to kids for 15 years. They grow up and they think that bringing a baby into the world is committing a hostile act against the planet. Surprise, birth rates drop. So to some extent, we're doing this to ourselves.
Yeah. Well, it certainly sounds entertaining. And just the few seconds that we have left, I want to tell that person watching this program that you really need to watch part two to figure out what we're going to do about these things and whether you agree with them. Because now, you know, whether you agree with the three challenges that Herb Meyer has laid out or not, I think you will agree that they pose some important questions about the future of this country as well as Europe. Our hope is that we have helped you understand these issues better and that you'll continue to educate yourself on them in the future, because as you know, the future is going to be what we make it. Join us next week for part two when we discuss what to do about the challenges. Thanks for inviting us in to talk about things that matter with people who care.
Want more episodes like this? Don't forget to subscribe and get updates each week for the Free to Choose Media Podcast.